Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB in Freeport, New York, and live streaming on the web at am1240wgbb.com. And I'm here with the author of A Very Good Year, which is a book about what most of us would consider a really terrible year, because a lot of bad things were happening, although by the end of the year, things kind of got better, but in a strange, odd way. The author of the book is Larry Quacci, C-U-O-C-C-I. Remember that name because you'll be going to Amazon.com and looking for it to buy this book, or just go under the title A Very Good Year. And I think we're going to have a very good interview with Mr. Quacci, who's here in the neighborhood. Welcome, Larry.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great, going great. So this book, which people would be interested in for two reasons. First of all, the whole issue of what was going on when you were 17 years old and what was happening with your family and specifically your mom, and then also the fact that it was happening around here in like the Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island area. So you're also a local boy. So let's go there. What's the book about?
Well, when I was it takes place when I'm 17 years old, and like most 17-year-olds, I just wanted to have fun, pass my road test, fall in love, get a car, get a girlfriend. But and I was a senior in high school. But my mom was very ill. She was stricken with a deadly form of skin cancer. And as she got worse, she turned to me and she asked me to end her life. And what do you do when somebody you love is in pain and they ask you to end it for them? And it wasn't the kind of thing any of my 17-year-old friends were dealing with. And here, you know, I'm a senior in high school and have these other goals for me and for myself, and have to face this sort of dilemma.
Right. Now, I'm kind of wondering, it's not like she was a single mom raising you. I mean, you had a dad, and we're going to get into talking about him. But wouldn't it have been more natural for her to ask him to do the euthanasia thing?
Well, my dad was a real son of a bitch. He was an abusive father growing up, and in one of life's great ironies, even though he used to kick the crap out of me back then, now he's 83 years old and he lives with me and my wife, my son, and my dog Max. So I'm his caregiver now. And
well, that
took a lot of forgiveness on my part. I'll tell you.
I mean, tell what he did to your sister. Not just
yeah.
You.
I mean, part of this book is about the choices and the stuff I did and at 17 and 1976. But there's also some child abuse there because there's a scene there where I relate where my dad chased my sister downstairs to the basement. And she was 7 years older, 7 years older than me, and so she was 12, I was 5. And I watched as my dad upended my sister, held her by her ankles, and proceeded to pound her head into the basement floor. And that was
sounds reasonable.
Vivid imprinting on me.
Probably imprinted the tile on her head.
That's right. Of course, my sister says, I don't remember that. I said, yeah, you know,
she
got brain damage from that. So my
was
dad
she
used
fine,
to,
I mean,
she was, but she'd gotten beaten. And then when she turned 17, my dad threw her out of the house. So my sister wasn't around when my mom was really ill. And my dad just, he was in denial with my mom's illness, and I was sort of my mom's best friend. We'd go traveling together, we'd go to Broadway shows, opera together, and
While she had the malignant
it certainly cut down the last couple of years. I mean, she wound up fighting cancer all of 5 years, which made her sort of a success story because she had made the 5-year survival rate. I mean, after she'd had chemotherapy, radiation, all these things, and surgeries, because she had her body was covered with all these tumors, one the size of a grapefruit, which my father called the cantaloupe. So it was and then after the surgeries to remove, she thought it would improve her appearance and her quality of life, but after the tumors were removed, she had all these sort of sores all over that I wound up sort of being her nurse and changing her bandages, which was a lot of fun, especially, you know, summer between when I graduated high school and about to start college. So all my friends were having fun in the street, and here was I changing my mom's bandages.
Well, you had a certain way of coping with all this.
Yeah,
your coping mechanism wasn't the best, but...
No, I wound up doing copious amounts of drugs that year. I mean, mostly to escape from my mom's disease. And
your dad's...
And my dad's abusive personality, yeah. He was also verbally abusive, so...
I understand that.
on the first page of my book, I just... I have a little list of what I did that year, so, if I may...
This is A Very Good Year by Larry Quachy, and these are the drugs that Larry did when he was 17.
This is on the first page from Chapter 1, The Little Savior. What I remember most about that year was my preoccupation with the three D's: drugs, death, and driving. Drugs. By the time I turned 18, I had inhaled whippets of nitrous oxide, smoked grass, hash, and angel dust, dropped acid, taken peyote, mescaline, THC, lewds, Demerol, black beauties, and crystal meth. Death. My mom was dying of malignant melanoma, the form of skin cancer, where tumors the size of grapefruits erupted all over the surface of her body. In 1976, it was 95% fatal. Now, it's only 90% fatal. Ah, the marvels of modern medicine. Driving. From my 17th birthday until my 18th, I failed the driving test 4 times. Not the written. You'd have to be a total moron to fail that even once. No. The driving exam itself, you know, hand signals, parallel parking. My dad taught me how to drive. He never let me go over 20 miles per hour while he was in the car. All my driving examiners thought I was too scared to drive, and they were right. But it wasn't driving I was scared of. It was my dad.
And again, the irony being that
now I take care of him.
Lives with you, and you take care of him. And, you know, there's even a double irony on top of that that goes back on him. What did he want for his birthday?
Oh, yeah, that's funny. His 83rd birthday.
Yeah.
My dad's got all these diseases. He's got chronic leukemia, scleroderma, congestive heart failure. So he said, Lawrence, for my birthday, no, give me a gift. I want you to make a list on the computer, all my diseases. I said, what do you mean, all your diseases? Write a list. Do for me. Write a list. Print it out on the computer. I said, you sure, Dad? Yeah, this is what I want. So I wrote a list of, like, 35 ailments that he had, okay? And from the morning of his birthday, he called up all his friends and relatives, and he said, you want to hear all my list of diseases? They said, no, thank you, Sergio. Oh, number one, chronic leukemia. Number two, scleroderma. And he'd read down the list, and that's how he passed his birthday.
Does he understand that it's karma at this point? That
I don't think he... understands that. He's a kvetchy old man. I mean, I love him. I had to work very hard to have a loving relationship. In fact, a funny thing, just a couple of years ago, my sister had moved, I mean, we're on good terms, but my sister had moved to Florida a few years ago. And my dad was 81, still driving his car. And I said, Dad, how many miles a year do you drive? And he says, 75. I said, this is before he moved in with us.
Yeah.
I said, 7,500? No, 75. I said, well, it doesn't pay for you to really keep the car. I mean, I'll give you a lift, and the neighbor will give you a lift. And he says, okay, we give the car to Connie, to your sister, my daughter. I said, okay. And he says, and we drive down to Florida and give it to her. I said, a road trip with me and you? He says, yeah. I said, okay. So we drove down to Florida. We stayed overnight at South of the Border, which we used to. We used to go down to Florida every year when I was a kid, when he'd drive. And all the way going down there, because my dad had never been to Disney World in his life.
Because
when we used to go to Florida, Disney World hadn't been built yet. And so I'm thinking, I'm going to get my father on the Dumbo ride. I could just see my father spinning around on Dumbo, and then I got some great shots of him. And we drove down to Florida, had a road trip, me and my dad. It was a lot of fun. He got to see his sister who lives in Florida. He hadn't seen for 10 years or so. And it was a lot of fun, actually.
Oh, my gosh. There are, I guess, happy endings to things. But let's backtrack to what is the crux story-wise of the book of your mom and the decision that she gave to you.
Right.
Because we were up to that point where she ladled it on you,
right,
rather than your dad, and then you were spaced with it.
Right. I don't know if anybody out there can recall an actual moment in their life when their childhood was lost and gone forever, but it happened to me. It was July 4th, 1976. It was a bicentennial year. We had, like, Operation Sail, and my friends were lighting bottle rockets outside, and because I had agreed to do this, and my mom's insurance didn't cover a nurse coming in and changing her bandages, so I wound up changing her bandages, and her quality of life after this last surgery had really fallen, and she turned to me and she said, "Lawrence, I want you to promise me something. Promise me that if I ever become a vegetable, you'll put a pillow over my head and end it for me. I can't ask this of your father. I could only ask it of you, because I know you do it. Promise me you do it." And I looked out the window. I saw kids. This is July 4th, 76. My friend lighting bottle rockets off, kids popping wheelies on their bikes, girls sunning themselves with reflectors. And I thought, this is the end of my childhood. And literally, I ran screaming from the room. I ran, this was in Canarsie section of Brooklyn, and we were, I guess, about a mile from the water. And I ran to the water, to the Jamaica Bay, and I screamed at God, "Why me?" I mean, the Nancy Kerrigan defense, "Why me?" And I wound up going back to the room, and I told my mom, "I promise, Mom, I promise." And then a few months later, she had the disease had progressed, and she had slipped into a coma. She was in the hospital, and the doctor said she can't feel or hear or sense the world around her. But I discovered the first day she was in the hospital, I asked her a question. I said, "Mom, if you can hear me, wiggle your right forefinger once for yes, twice for no." And I said, "Can you hear me?" She said, "Yes." And I did tests, you know, "Is my name Sergio?" And she'd say, "No." So, "Are you in pain?" And she said, "Yes." And then I asked her, "Do you want me to end it for you?" And she said, "Yes." And that's when I was faced with not just an academic situation, but a real hardcore decision. You know, how do you kill your mom? She was in pain. I wanted the pain to end. I asked the doctors. I said, "My mom's in pain." They said, "Oh, no, she's not." I said, "No, she is." And they said, "Well, here we've got the comatologist on your mom's team, and he says that she's not aware of anything." I said, "She's in a lot of pain. I mean, she signaled to me." So they wouldn't even give her pain meds. I asked my friends, my best friend, who was a girl, and I shared all secrets with her, and we're sitting in her room smoking cigarettes, and I turned to her. I said, "You know, my mom asked me to end her life, and she's in coma, and she's in pain, and this is what I got to do." And she turns to me. My nickname, which is on the cover of the book, is Cooch. Everybody called me Cooch because nobody from an early age could pronounce Kawachi, so they called me Cooch. And she says, "Cooch, I don't know what to say. I can't relate to that."
Wow.
And I felt so unbelievably alone in the world. And I asked doctors hypothetically, and they said, "Oh, you're talking about euthanasia. We can never harm. We can only heal." And at that point, my mom wasn't doing much healing, so I didn't see their point.
Where did the 7 days come from that you gave yourself like a
break? Yeah. Oh, so she was in coma, and that night, around the corner from the hospital where she was, in the Upper East Side of Manhattan, was this beautiful little church, and I wasn't a religious person. I was brought up, my mom was Jewish, my father was Catholic, and I was Jewish from the waist down, so we had a little tinfoil Christmas tree every Christmas. That was my whole really religious upbringing, but I didn't know where to turn, so, and a teacher, mentor teacher of mine said, "You know, how do you feel? Are you religious? Do you believe in God?" And I said, "I think so." And then also, ironically, my real pothead friend, who was never straight in more ways than one, a day in his life, I called him up. He was at SUNY Binghamton, and he said, "Well, man, if it was up to me, I'd pray." And this is a guy who I never saw not high, you know.
Right.
I said, "You?" And he says, yeah, man, I was bar mitzvahed, I believe. And so I prayed to God. And I said, God, I'll give you 1 week, 7 days. If you can take my mom away and make her free from pain and suffering, then do it. If you can't, at the end of the 7 days, I'll have to do it myself. And I went so far as to, you know, timing the nurse's shifts, figuring out a side entrance I could sneak into. I wrapped a pillow with a plastic bag, a dry cleaning bag, because I was afraid, like watching a lot of crime TV, that there'd be an autopsy and there'd be little fibers in the lungs. And I was all ready to do it. And
on the seventh day?
On the seventh day, I was going to Brooklyn College at that time, and we had this road rally, which is like a scavenger hunt, where you drive around picking up hints and clues all over the metropolitan New York metropolitan area. And around 1 o'clock in the morning, I was passing her hospital, where my mom was, on the FDR Drive, and I could swear I heard my mom singing. And she was singing this Mexican folk song she used to sing. As she was a kindergarten teacher for 25 years, and she was singing Cielito Lindo, which is ay, 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 canta no llores. And I could swear I heard her singing. And
it wasn't the Frito Bandito.
It wasn't the Frito Bandito, right.
That was her spirit.
The next morning, which was the morning of the eighth day, I got a phone call from the hospital that she had passed in her sleep around 1 o'clock in the morning. And I felt that was her spirit that passed me. And it was now the morning of the eighth day, and I was spared my task. I sort of dodged the bullet. And God came through for me.
Could you have done it?
I think I could have done it, but I think I could not have lived with myself. I don't think I could have lived killing the person I love most in my life. That year, which I wound up calling a very good year after the song When I Was 17, it was a very good year, which Frank Sinatra sings and Irvin Drake wrote. During that year, I had a few wishes to pass my road test, to lose my virginity, and for my mom to be free from pain and suffering. And although I did fall in love for the first time in that year, I got 2 out of 3.
All right.
So it wound up being a very good year for me. And as Nietzsche says, that which does not kill us makes us stronger. And I was stronger. I mean, I learned about love and life and death along the way. And if I didn't have those experiences molded me and made me the person I am today. And the two reasons I really wrote this book was for me to be free from these ghosts. If you keep writing and telling a story over and over, it doesn't have power over you anymore. And also for people out there who may have had a really hard time in their life or facing a tough time, and they don't know if they could get through it another day, let alone a week or 7 days. And I went through a lot of drugs. I got arrested during this year. I mean, my mom had to come literally bail me out, which was not a fun thing to experience. And fell in love, had my first sexual experience, and the type of ways I dealt with it and how I came out okay and a loving, caring person at the end. I'm happily married and a father.
And you're not smashing your children's
head? No, I'm not smashing my son's head, although, you know, he's taking jujitsu, so I can't smash his head. He's 21 now. And I take care of my dad, so I'm a pretty good loving son, I hope, knock on wood. And anybody out there who's either disappointed somebody in their life, and who hasn't, or just have a tough time, or even has faced child abuse and don't know how they can recover from that. It's all in there. It's all in a very good year. There's sex, drugs, love, death, child abuse. Everything a good story should have.
And if you want to have this story, again, it's called A Very Good Year. It's from Palette Press Books and written by Larry Quachi. C-U-O-C-C-I. It won the, or sorry, it was an award finalist at the USBookNews.com for 2004. You can get it at Amazon. You can get it in a bunch of different normal and abnormal book places.
Yes, and April 13th at the Barnes & Nobles on Miracle Mile near Lord & Taylor at 1542 Northern Boulevard. April 13th at 7:30, I'll be doing a reading. Come one, come all. Be there, be square.
Right.
Pleasure being here.
Thank you, Larry, for being in the neighborhood.